Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Tuesday edition. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and of course, it is great to have you here with me on this eighth day of August 2006. I have a very special honored guest to be speaking with today. He is the Bishop of Jerusalem for the Episcopal Diocese of Jerusalem. He is an Anglican bishop. His name is the Right Reverend Ria Abu El Asal. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Indeed.
Was that pretty good,
yeah.
Bishop? Well, you know something? It's wonderful to have you here because so few people hear the full story about what's going on. Our press is so slanted, and it only tells the Israeli side of everything. And I would like you to give your unbiased view of what's been happening in Jerusalem and in the West Bank and Gaza over the last few months here, and especially in the last month since they invaded Lebanon.
Well, let me begin by first thanking you for this wonderful opportunity to share and speak to our people. In France in particular.
Well, you're very welcome. This actually will go out worldwide, Reverend, and it'll go throughout the United States and Europe. So you're going to...
I'm the more grateful,
yeah,
the more appreciative of you, of this opportunity. Ever since the election of Hamas, and we all know that Hamas came to power as a result of a democratic election that was, as a matter of fact, imposed on the Palestinian people who were under occupation.
Yes.
With the object of democratizing the Palestinian community. Mm. It's unfortunate that the results were not welcomed by either the administration in Washington or by the Israeli government.
Mm.
And ever since, we went back to square one. Gaza is under siege.
Yeah.
And the people of Palestine are having it far more difficult than before.
Have they bombed the infrastructure recently where the electricity has been shut down? And
it was.
Yeah.
It was. I mean,
yeah,
the power station in Gaza was bombed, and as many as 750,000, which is 50% of the total population of Gaza, is suffering as a result of no electricity. And when I say no electricity, we're not talking only about light. We're talking also about pumps, pumping clean water. It's no more there, I'm told.
How about the Arab hospital?
The same. We have to use now generators.
Yeah.
And if because as a result of the closures, fuel is not reaching in time, and we have to be very careful how long can we switch on our generator if we don't have the fuel needed to work it out. And if this is true in a hospital, you can imagine the situation of people at homes.
Have you been able to travel from Jerusalem to the Gaza or to the any parts of the West Bank since this has started?
Yes, we've been to Nablus, and we managed to take some food supplies and the little gift to our hospital, St. Luke's Hospital in Nablus. And then the following Saturday, after 3 days, we managed to go to Gaza. We had to wait for 2.5 hours at the checkpoint until they allowed us to go in. We were the only three who managed to get into Gaza for the day. And it is a heartbreaking experience. What I have seen, what I have heard from the local community, the simple folk on the streets, our director of the hospital, the priests whom we met with in Gaza, the different officials in Gaza. And then we were taken to see one of the orchards, orange orchards, that was turned into almost close to being toothpicks as a result of the uprooting and the work of the bulldozers on those orchards that go back to 30, 40 years. And we've seen some of the houses that have been demolished. People told us that they were given 30 minutes to vacate the house. What would they be able to take with them? So it's a story of pain. It's a story of pain, a story of death. We visited the injured in hospital. We had the stories from the families who lost dear ones as a result of being shot from the air, etc., etc.
Now, I've got an important question. They did try to destroy the newly elected government, did they not? And did they not kidnap and actually kill several of them?
After the kidnapping of the soldier, the Israeli soldier,
That seems staged to me, Reverend, to me. That seems like a staged event. It doesn't seem real to me.
Well, I don't know what happened. I mean, but we know that a number of key figures in government are still taken hostage in Israel. And for no reason whatsoever, simply because they said until the soldier is returned. And it's like somebody going into the White House or into Congress and taking as many as he's able to take and making them detainees or hostages, which I personally believe it's not proper, and it does not help even to promote understanding or peacemaking between the conflicting parties.
What percentage of the Palestinian population are Christian adherents, of all types of Christianity? What percentage of your population is Christian?
If you are talking about the Palestinian community, both within Israel and in Palestine, and there are Palestinians who form the minority within the state of Israel, I would say the percentage is about 10 to 11% are Christians.
Okay.
But when you take into consideration the total population of geographic Palestine, which is Israel and Palestine put together, the percentage of Christians of all denominations, not Episcopalians only, Catholics, Orthodox, Copts, you name them, is 1.5%. We have dwindled to almost nothing.
What was it 40 years ago?
I would say 60 years ago, we were 23%.
So
in
most
Jerusalem,
of these Christians
40 years ago, for example, in Jerusalem, we had 28,000 Christians in 1967. Today, we'll be lucky if we have 8,000-9,000. And we should have become 70,000 in 40 years if we were 28,000. But today we have, as I said, 8,000 to 9,000 Christians, most of whom are of the aged, of the sick, and less able to leave the country if they wanted to leave.
Now, of your diocese in Jerusalem, are you getting support from the Episcopal Church worldwide, or in Britain for that matter? Isn't Britain the seat of this religious group?
No, we are an autonomous diocese. We are part of the Anglican Communion, like the Episcopal Church of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
We have our friends, and those friends are struggling hard to get the support needed to keep a hospital going, to keep a school going, to help a needy family, etc., etc. We got better support as a result of a project called Jerusalem 2000, which was the project headed by the then Archbishop of Canterbury, Lord George Carey, and the presiding Bishop of the United States of America, Frank Griswold, and myself, and John Peterson, certainly, who was the Secretary General of the ACC, and others who formed the Board of Trustees. But now, I mean, whereas in the year 2000, 2001, we were able to raise good money, now money is raised, but not enough to keep the church services going as we wish and desire.
Now, let me ask you this. It seems to me that there is a concerted effort, and actually a planned effort, to destroy the survivability of the Palestinian community. It looks like they're attempting in some way either a mass exodus or a mass genocide of this society, either by starvation or by just, I don't know, they're crushing them with bulldozers and they're bombing them from the air. What is the goal of the Israelis in your view, and what is it that the damage being done? I mean, it looks like a genocide from my eyes.
Oh, more than 150 people were killed over the last month, I would say. Most of whom were killed from the air. Many people, I mean, we're heading to a real humanitarian crisis in Gaza. I have seen with my own eyes the piles of garbage on the sidewalks, and I was told by our people at our hospital in Gaza that if the pumps don't start working to clear the sewage and to bring clean water for the people, we are heading to a real crisis and the fear of cholera. Now, what does that mean to a population which is under siege? Anybody with enough common sense can imagine the situation.
If a cholera outbreak hits Gaza, isn't Gaza one of the most heavily populated areas in the world?
It is the most populated area in the world.
Yeah.
It is the most populated
area. So cholera would be...
And the majority of the people are of the young.
Yeah. I mean, cholera would sweep through that community like a raging fire, would it not?
If, God forbid, if it happens, it's going to be very, very serious.
Well, let's go back to that first, that other question I had. What is the intention of the Israelis, in your view? You know, I know the story about how they took control of that region, and so I think we'll save that for another discussion. But I want to know what you think their presence.
People will be discouraged. The fact that the international community has its eyes now diverted towards Lebanon, towards Iraq, and very few people seem to be caring about the Palestinian people in Gaza or the West Bank. The way the wall, the separation wall, is being built, which will separate families from families, from children from schools, our people from churches, and the like. Some people may tolerate this for some time. Others may not. And I fear that some of them, with the renewed hostilities in the Middle East, will pack and leave very much the same as the people of Iraq. We lost 1.5 million Iraqi Christians as a result of the war, which began in 2003. And people tell me, those people were living under Saddam. I said, yes, they had it even better under Saddam than under the new people who are leading the war on Iraq. So I fear for our people that some of them feel that there is very little hope for a settlement, and people have the means and the friends or family somewhere in the world. They might say, well, we will go for 6 months, for a year, and then end up going for always. Mm-hmm. And that's what really happened to the Christian community. One fellow immigrated to America or to Canada or to Australia, and then he said, well, it's different here. So also encouraged his brother, his sister, his dad, his mom, etc., etc. And as a result, we lost quite a number of our people. The same will be true now in Lebanon as a result of the war on Lebanon.
Well, isn't Israel starved for water, and isn't this a lot of this about them moving to the Litani so they can get the water resources into the Central Valley, into Israel? Because it seems to me, you know, desalination plants and water coming from the Jordan is not enough for their interests. So it looks like they're gonna move into the Litani River and start pumping water south.
Well, if that's the object of their war in Lebanon, in my opinion, I mean, that's a foolish thing to do. In time of peace, they can enjoy all the water in the world, in the Middle East. In time of war, there will be all sorts of ways to make it impossible for them to steal the water from the Litani or any other source of water in the Lebanon.
Well, this I look at this, Bishop, and I've got to say to you, it seems as though they're... in the Bible, there are passages that say the Israelis will, well, it doesn't call them Israelis, it calls them the Jews will rise up and reduce to stubble. And to stubble is the actual wording in the Bible, the area around Tyre. And they are doing exactly that. They're reducing the region to stubble. And I must say, this is another act of genocide, I think, and ethnic cleansing of the region.
Well, as I said, I mean... If this is their military objective, then it will be catastrophic not only for the Lebanon, but it will be catastrophic also for the people of Israel. People will not forget in the Middle East. It's not as easy for people to forget. People will not forgive if this is the objective. And we're going to end up in a number of rounds of hostilities, which will ultimately defeat the very cause for which the early Jewish community fought for, namely to live in peace and security in the Middle East. Today, they're fighting a faction of the Lebanese community. If things remain as they are, there will be, I don't know how many factions, how many parties, how many Hezbollahs who will form themselves and prepare for another round and another round. It is foolish of any leader to think that wars can bring about peace.
Well, you know, from the very founding of that place, terrorism, modern-day terrorism, Bishop, was invented by this group. And they've been using it against the people throughout, and all the way through the Levant affair, up through the Liberty, up through 67, and we know that in Al-Arish, they actually slaughtered 1,000 Egyptian prisoners of war. I mean, this is not a group of people you can reason with, and I'm wondering, when the motivation of this group is going to change. Or is it ever going to change? I mean, I don't see them ever giving up their goals of regional supremacy.
Well, if that's the goals of the community at large, which I don't think this is the community at large. There is a group within Israel that believes that this is their mission in the world. In my opinion, even this will not succeed. People will rise up. People will not allow. Public opinion will change. It's already started changing in the world.
Yes.
And people started hearing the truth.
Yep.
People like yourself telling the true story, the facts on the ground. It will help public opinion change, and once public opinion change, there will be a change in this political dirty game, and then I fear for whoever continues to oppress the others.
Well, it's sad to me because I have had some experiences here in France with many Arab families the hospitality of these people has always been wonderful. Very, very generous when you visit. Very, very warm and forthcoming when you speak to them. And I wonder how the demonization of the Arabs in the American press and the British press and even in Europe. It's awful because we don't get a fair hearing, Bishop. What we hear is this one-sided, sick view of what an Arab is, and it's never positive. It's always negative. And there are many people across America who say, good enough for the Arabs, they're bad guys. And it's a lie. It's not true.
It's a lie, and I think the media is hostage to one group in the world.
Yeah.
They have the money. And they seem to have the influence on the administration, on Congress, and on the Senate.
Yep.
Some people in the world cannot live without enemies. If they don't find them, they create them.
Mm-hmm.
The Arabs have been created by the same God who created the Jew and the American and the British and the French, etc., etc. The Arabs are not a bunch of idiots or a bunch of terrorists, as some people wish to see them. Some of them resist humiliation and resist occupation. And we all know in the Middle East, but also throughout the world, that the root cause of all of this conflict is the illegal occupation of Arab land. And the fact that Israel so far did not comply with the United Nations resolutions at a time when they are asking the Lebanese government to occupy with 1559, etc., etc. So the way they try to label the Arabs, every Arab is a Muslim. People are ignorant of the fact. I'm an Arab Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
I am at the same time I'm Christian. At the same time I'm a citizen of the State of Israel. So how do people view me? If I were to tell them I come from Israel, they would think I'm a Jew, so he's a good guy. If I tell them I'm an Arab Palestinian, they might, an Arab Palestinian, then he must be a Muslim. When were you converted? If I say, no, I'm not only Arab, I'm also Palestinian. Palestinians are this and that. Labeling people does not. Hold for many years. The international community will get to know the Arabs, will get to know the Palestinians, and they will certainly change their opinion on who the Arabs are, who the Muslims are, who the Palestinians are, who the Israelis are, etc., etc.
Well, you know,
You can fool the whole world part of the time. You cannot fool the whole world all of the time.
Well, you know, the one of the tools being used against people like myself and fighting to get the truth out is that this group, and they are Khazarians by heritage. They're from the Mongol hordes that were settled in the Russian steppes. And they were Ashkenazis, and they were not even Semitic peoples in that time frame. And they were actually converts to Judaism, but yet this same group who is not Semitic turns around and calls me an anti-Semite for trying to tell the truth about the events that they are involved with. And
this is part of their weakness, in my opinion. They also speak of me as anti-Semitic, and I laugh because I myself am Semite. People don't realize that the Arabs are Semitic. They don't realize that the Palestinians are Semitic. The Arab Christians are Semitic. The Palestinian Christians are Semitic. The Lebanese, the Syrians, the Jordanians, they're all Semites. And when you speak of anti-Semitism now in the West, I think it is anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab. In Lebanon or Syria or Palestine or the Arabs inside Israel.
So they've stolen the definition and made it into something.
Yeah. Exactly. And the Arabs had nothing to do with Western anti-Semitism. The Jews were never persecuted at the hands of the Arabs. On the contrary, had it not been for the Arabs who invaded Spain in the 7th century, there would have been no Jewish presence in Spain today. The Arabs who reached Spain saved the Jews from the Inquisition. The Arabs never persecuted the Jews. The Jews in 70 AD were expelled by Titus the Roman, and they never heard of Manhattan or Brooklyn in those years. and they found refuge among the Arab countries. They went to Morocco, they went to Tunis, they went to Iraq, they went to Syria, they lived among us for 2,000 years, they knew what the Arabs are, etc. The Ashkenazi Jews is a different story. The Sfaradim, the Oriental Jews, they know better, that they had it better, otherwise how would they survive 2,000 years? They lived among us for, since 70 AD until the most recent history, when Israel came about. They came, majority of them came from the Arab countries. They, and some of the very fanatic Jewish parties used to even plant bombs in synagogue to encourage the Jewish community to leave Iraq or leave Tunis and immigrate to Israel.
Didn't Ben Gurion say that he would prefer a cow in Jerusalem than a Jew? He would save a cow in Jerusalem before he'd save a Jew in Europe, is what he said, I think, his exact quote. Maybe somebody will correct me on that. In other words, he wanted all of the Jewish communities of Europe, especially Northern Europe, to emigrate to Palestine. And in order to do that, he created a pogrom in Europe. Did they not?
Well, I mean, I don't know who created the pogrom, but the pogrom was partly responsible for the present conflict in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had it not been, perhaps, though I'm not sure, because some of the Christians continue to believe in what we call eschatology. For Jesus Christ to come in his second coming, the Jews first need to come back to Palestine, to Israel, etc. And which I do not believe to be the case, because in Jesus Christ, as a Christian I speak, all the law and the prophets have been fulfilled. All the law and the prophets have been fulfilled, and this is not my statement, this is the statement of the New Testament.
Yes.
But some people, for political agendas and for political interests, they are prepared to exploit the Bible, interpret it in the manner they are doing these days to justify the injustices on our people and on the land at large.
I agree with that statement wholeheartedly, and here's my little addendum to it. We've got almost 30 million Zionist Christians in the United States being run by people like Pat Robertson and by Reverend Hagee, and even including Billy Graham's son and Billy Graham himself. And my research shows me that Mr. Graham is a descendant of the Frank family, Jacob Frank. And if you know anything about the Frankist movement, that would be an eye-opener for you. But the simple fact of the matter is these people are instituting hatred against the Arab community in order to further some kind of bizarre raptured something or other. It's foolish when I hear it, but yet we've got almost 30 million of these people across America. Do you understand what their goals are, this group?
Yeah, I know. They call them the Christian Zionists or the Christian Right, and they advocate the return of the Jews. Perhaps they don't like the Jews to stay in America. They want them out of America. I don't know. This could be also a part of their agenda. But then, if we follow in their thesis, the Jews will come to Israel, and two-thirds of them will suffer at the hands of I don't know who, and the one-third will say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, and only then Jesus Christ will come in his second coming, as if Jesus Christ wants to come over dead bodies.
So the Bible that these folks are using is a Bible that is...
It's a distortion of biblical and scriptural passages.
It's called the Schofield Bible, is it not?
Yeah, it's a distortion, and that's a political agenda on the mind of some of them who think in saying, in doing what they are saying or doing, they are serving the Jewish community. If I were a Jew, I would be scared to death of those people, because in the long run, they will cause me the greatest harm, because they're doing it on my behalf, sometimes in my name, and they don't realize how the international community, how the people in the world will turn when they towards me and say, you've done it.
Yeah. Well, you know, can I ask you a question here? I know that there are many, many good Jews in Israel who are appalled by what they see happening in their country, and many of them are disillusioned with what's happened. I know if over 50,000 Russian immigrants, Jewish immigrants from Russia, have returned to Russia saying that they did not like what kind of politics go on and the kind of racism they see, and they didn't want any part of it. Do you see a groundswell of Jews themselves in Israel starting to get angered at what they see going on around them?
Oh, yes. There are quite a number. It's true that many of the Russian Jews left back either to Russia or to the States. The number of Jewish community in Berlin went beyond 3,000, and a woman was quoted saying it is safer to be in Berlin than to be in Tel Aviv. I mean, many, many of the Jewish people in Israel are not happy about how others are using, misusing, and abusing them in the long run. There is also the Peace Now movement, which is very much anti this kind of policy of fighting the neighboring countries under the pretense of self-defense and the like. They are demonstrating with us against the war in Lebanon. They demonstrate with us against the atrocities on the Palestinian people and the like. But they are still in the minority.
Yeah.
There are some. And a number of them also packed and left.
How can I help with what I'm doing? I mean, can I lend even more support for this group? Because I believe, honestly, that it's from the Jews themselves, especially the ones in Israel. If they speak out strong enough, if they become powerful enough a force, we may be able to unseat these criminal leaders that they've got in charge of their nation.
Only if we can get them to lead the government and to lead the people of Israel, will there be peace and will there be security for both the Jew and the Arab, the Israeli and the Palestinian? But as long as people have their mind on war, on revenge, on retaliation, it's not going to happen. It's not going. I mean, peace. We will be far from peace. Peace certainly is not the peace that comes out of death. You can't expect peace because people are dead and that quiet. No, peace is that relationship from all the causes that made for war are no more. And in my opinion, the way forward is not another road map, because the road map, in my opinion, is a road without a map and a map without a road.
Well, they've never adhered to it anyway.
Yeah.
They used it as political expedient.
Nobody, yes. And in my opinion, the way forward is for the international community, for the United Nations to at least have self-respect and see to it that when they resolve, they see to it that those resolutions are implemented. And if Israel were to comply with United Nations resolutions 242 and 338 and 194 and pull out from the occupied territories, I want to tell you what I told Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of the UK, when he tried to convince me that going to war in Iraq will pave the way for peace in the Middle East. I turned to him and said, the shortest way to Baghdad goes through Jerusalem. Come to Jerusalem. Let's make peace in Jerusalem. And once peace comes to Jerusalem, peace will come to the whole world. He smiled. He went to Iraq rather than coming to Jerusalem. And now he finds himself in real trouble.
You know, you're assuming, Bishop, and I've got to tell you personally, I don't think he's really pulling any of the strings, and I certainly don't think George Bush has the brains to even know where Jerusalem is on a map. But that's just coming between you and I. I think the people making these decisions are much they're very clandestine, and they're much more hidden from view than most people realize. And I think their agenda is something far more sinister than what most people can realize.
Oh, I strongly believe that there is a hidden agenda.
Mm.
Certainly. I mean, it had. When he spoke, he said, once we finish with Iraq, we'll present the roadmap. I said, what roadmap? What roadmap?
Mm.
And after we were given a copy of the roadmap, I discovered, like others, that, as I said, a road without a map, and a map without a road. And we all know that has been shelved and maybe shelved for always.
Well, you know,
the way forward is for the international community to see to it that the Palestinians have an equal right on Palestinian soil, the right to self-determine their affairs, the right to have a Palestinian state side by side with Israel. And that is the way forward for peace and for reconciliation in the Middle East.
Well, it looks like the next step is probably going to instigate something with Syria and possibly Iran. These folks don't look like they want to stop here, Bishop. And I got to be honest with you, it seems as though they're doing everything in their power to provoke the next stage of this, which is to kill more people and to expand this thing beyond the Latani and even into Syria and into Iran. And, I mean, that possibility can't be ignored.
No, it's not ignored. And many people started talking that we are heading, unless the Israelis pull out now from Lebanon, unless the aggression on Lebanese territory will stop and every Israeli soldier will go back home, I fear that we're heading towards a regional war in which not only Israel but others will be party, and God knows who will be party with the other party, and we may end up in a real chaos, not only in the Middle East, but in different parts of the world.
I agree with you. You know, I admire your efforts here. I got to tell you, I have been working almost around the clock as much as my health will permit me to try and let people know just how dire these events really are, because they are really a I think they're an indication to me that the agenda behind the scenes that most people are not even aware of is far more dangerous than anyone can even estimate at right now. And
definitely. I mean, for anyone with common sense, I wouldn't even say enough common sense, will tell you that it's not the kidnapping of the soldiers.
Yeah. How could you kidnap a soldier anyway? I mean, you take a prisoner of war.
Israel could have kidnapped 10 soldiers from Lebanon. But the agenda goes beyond the release of those two soldiers.
Yeah.
And that's a frightening thing. We know what it means to enter a war. Nobody knows the end of this. In my opinion, whoever goes into war now may win a battle, but he's sure to lose the war. Whoever, including the United States of America, they're losing the war in Iraq. They may win a battle, but they will lose the war.
Well, now let me ask you this: your agenda is are you still to fly to Britain to be on the Hard Talk program?
I've been already, and I'm told that I have been on the BBC today. Only here in Germany, we can't see the BBC. It's not in the hotel. I mean, on the TV, we have only CNN. I don't know why.
I know why, but you know.
Listen,
you know, Bishop, I've got to tell you, I wish you to staying safe in this battle so that your voice continues to ring out with the truth. And I will contact you in your office in Jerusalem when you return.
Thank you.
We will do is we will discuss some other things. I have made some very close associations with some very good statesmen in this world. And I'm trying my darndest to get these folks as involved as you have been to stop it all. I don't know how successful we'll be, but I certainly have to try at least. And I know you're working feverishly to stop this. Is there anything that you think I could do to help you further your message?
Well, in the first place, thank you for sharing the story with so many people worldwide. for which I cannot find enough words to express my gratitude to you. I would like to invite people to read some of the circulars that we write and circulate, most of which is on our web, the Diocese of Jerusalem, or the Anglican News Service. We would like to see more people join hands with us to relieve those who are in bad need now. The families in need of daily bread, the sick in need of medical services, those who have been displaced in need of a home. I know people together are great possibilities, and if we can encourage your listeners to really come to our support and extend the hand, at least we know that we can walk the many miles ahead of us, knowing that we have friends on our side and we are not walking alone.
Well, you've got more friends than you really. You've got a lot of friends across the world, Bishop. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm proud to know you, my friend. And I will be calling you in when you return to Jerusalem.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Right Reverend Ria Abu El Asal. He is the Episcopal Diocese Bishop of Jerusalem. And he has been kind enough to share this 45-minute discussion with us, and I want to thank him for being as honest as he has been. I wish him all the luck in the world with your efforts, because this is a battle, and I think we can win it. And for me, winning is to reduce suffering to zero. That's winning to me.
Exactly.
And so let's all, you know, work together to try and stop the suffering that I see happening on my screen here. And my goodness, you're a kind man, sir, and I'm very proud to have had the opportunity to talk with you this day.
Thank you very much indeed.
I will be speaking to you soon.
Bless you. Thank you.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the Bishop of Jerusalem for the Anglican Church, and he's a remarkable man because he understands far more than we discussed today, and we will have discussions on more pointed issues when he returns, because he I just wanted you to have an opportunity to hear the message about what has been going on in Palestine, as well as his take on some of the reasons and some of the solutions for it. It's a story that's developing quickly, and I fear could get worse. So between you and I, there is a very serious need here for each and every one of you to at least take a look at what has transpired here, and possibly start talking to this 30 million strong group of Christian Zionists and let them know they have been duped, they have been lied to by their leadership, and that they really desperately need to take a relook at what it is they believe and why it is they believe that. But that's a bigger effort, and it's something that we've been working very hard at here in the French Connection to do. And secondly, to have the Jewish community, both in Israel and outside of Israel, to start fighting back against what I know and what they probably know is a path to destruction by the leadership of the Israelis, as well as the Shabbat Lubavitchers over in both Brooklyn and the leadership in Washington and Miami and Los Angeles, and in fact in Israel itself. These people are they are trouble. They are creating trouble. They are fomenting its spread, and it seems as though unless we stop this direction, we're all going to be in a mess. So, until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying goodbye and be well. Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.